Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Pleased to welcome you to All Sides Weekend as we talk about books. This is one of my favorite ways to spend a late Friday morning. And my guest, as always, Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic and book maven and critic throughout the world. Bill Eichenberger, who is now on the faculty of Capital University. He's a well-known blogger and writer on books. And Professor Kevin Griffith, who is the faculty at Capital University, professor of creative writing at Capital University. They are my regular guests. We're going to talk about what's new, what's hot, what people are reading, and then we are going to ask for your phone calls. So I have to throw out one question to my panel, and that is, what is the most discussed, talked about, publicized book in the world at this moment?
Freedom.
And who wrote Freedom?
Franzen.
Okay, he's also an Oprah pick, isn't he?
He is.
And there's
again.
Been some yes. Mm-hmm. So Freedom by Jonathan Franzen is this novel that everybody's talking about. Cassie Rose, why is everybody talking about this novel?
Well, I think I should hand this over to
Kevin
who has read it. I haven't read it. Yes. But to that point, though, everybody who hasn't read it talks about it.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And so he's getting huge publicity. He's on the cover of Time magazine.
Well, maybe Cassie could be the person who talks about it the most without reading it. That
would
be a good honor.
Yes. I'll blog about it without
reading
it.
That's right.
Well, before that happens, let's ask Kevin Griffith to talk to us about Freedom because it is so highly discussed right now.
Well, I'm not one who's into like publicity and hype, and I have a real cynical eye towards those things. I thought the book was really overhyped, so I was not really looking forward to reading it, but I decided to go for it. I had read the corrections. I liked the corrections. Corrections had its problems. Wasn't an engaging read from end to end, I didn't think. But Freedom is the real deal, I believe. I read it in about 5 days. You're witnessing an artist at the top of his form in this book, and it has a lot of issues in it about mountaintop mining removal, war profiteering, a lot of issues, but they're very subsumed in the story of just two characters, Walter and Patty Berglund, that we get to know in great depth like I have never seen a novelist do, maybe Updike, but not since Updike, someone treating two characters in such depth from the beginning of their relationship in college all the way through to their breakup of the relationship and then the reconciliation at the end. And I actually felt sad when I finished the book, like I had lost a couple good friends or like they were leaving me for a while. I haven't felt that way in a long time. So I think it's a good read. And what's great, too, about it, I think, is, we've been criticized on the show for just talking about depressing things. And why are you talking about those depressing books? This is an extremely hopeful book, and it's about the power of love and what really matters. You know, you can throw out all those political issues and all those environmental issues, but ultimately what matters in the end is love for another person. That's going to carry you through. It's almost a sentimental idea, but we know that good writers risk sentimentality. He does it, and it has a very positive, hopeful ending. So I was extremely impressed. Yeah,
I'm wondering, Kevin. I mean, and I'd ask Cassie too. The publicity that he's getting, is this an encouraging sign, or is it just a fluke? I mean, because a lot of times you'll see huge publicity for books that aren't as good as this
right.
one.
No, I think the publicity for this is great because, again, here is something that's actually living up to the hype. And what's really impressive here is a person who doesn't just crank out a novel every year. It took him 9 years to write this.
Wow.
And something that takes that kind of effort, 9 years from his previous novel, you know, he that he's a craftsman. And I think he's rewarded by the publicity. This is not undeserved publicity or undeserved hype.
But still, when the publicity was coming out, people didn't know that end mm-hmm. result yet. So, and that was that people were – he was on the cover of Time magazine. Everybody was talking about his book mm-hmm. coming out, and nobody had read it yet. So the good news is to your point,
mm-hmm. yeah.
it is worthy of all that publicity. Mm-hmm. But the question is why? Why did Franzen get this? Why did he get on the cover of Time magazine?
Well, is it simply because the book was that good and somebody in power thought so and made that happen? Or am I
Well, I think it's great. I don't know. I think it is a great book. But I also think, and I think this is a good thing ultimately, although on the surface it may not sound so good. But I think there is a search out there, a desperate search for someone to sort of take the mantle of the great author. I mean, Roth is not at the top of his game anymore. Updike died. And then beyond that, I think we need someone who's worthy of that. And I would say, you know, let's be thankful that they found someone worthy of this. And I think Franzen is it. I think he can actually live up to that hype. This is not someone who's building his reputation on a foundation of sand or something, you know. I think this is good.
And he wants to write the great American novel. That is his intent, and which they say is dying. You know, mm-hmm. the novel that is, as you know, it's involved, it's mm-hmm. with the characters, and it's in depth. It's not the quick mm-hmm. read, the vampire read. Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the novel Freedom by Jonathan Franzen, which is on top of every bestseller list. It's on every magazine cover. It's an Oprah choice, which is either a kiss of death or a kiss of commercial success. I would tend to think the latter, although there's some controversy over that. It is very much the most talked about book, I would think, in the last few weeks.
Well, yeah, and I'm wondering, I mean, I talked years and years ago to Norman Mailer, and he was bemoaning the fact that he said when all the writers who were in World War II came home and in post-World War II after 45 into the 50s, he said any one of those writers could have ended up regularly would end up on the cover of Newsweek or Time or become part of the national conversation. And he was saying that those days are long gone and dead. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering, that's why I was asking about Franzen and this popularity or the hype about this book is that, I mean, or is this just a one-off deal and then gone? Or
no, I think go ahead.
The corrections made a very strong impression, not like mm-hmm. this, but it made a very strong impression, which is his previous book. I don't know if that was his first book or not.
No, that was his third book. Okay. He had written two books previous to that.
So, you know, I think to your point, Kevin, I think he takes his time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, he's written only four novels in his career. And that's a good sign. And I think it is a good sign. Maybe there's just one last desperate attempt in our culture to lionize a great author. We should all be happy of that he for once he was on the cover of Time and not, you know, whatever, an athlete or something.
Right. Exactly. But it's only Franzen, really. I mean, mm-hmm. Don DeLillo will get talked about,
right?
You know, but not at this level of hype.
Well, and you wonder the conversation then at Time Magazine, how they made that choice. Mm-hmm. What was it that put him on the cover versus Don DeLillo or some mm-hmm. other author?
I suspect that the next time we meet a month from now, we're going to all have read this book and loved it. That's my thing. So does it make you want to read the book, Cassie, all the talk? It does.
Absolutely. Now it does because of Kevin's recommendation. Yes. Well, otherwise, I was just thinking, uh-huh. I'm just going to let it go.
One thing you have to realize, too, though, is that I think one of the reasons Franzen is up there is that, you know, I read a lot of other novels that are about the writing industry. We talked about some the last time, like After the Workshop. And Franzen, he's the one. I mean, he's the one you go after. All writers either admire him or hate him or both. And he's considered the bar that, you know, that set that you have to, aspire to. And in fact, in one of the novels, it was really funny. The character was saying, I went out and bought a pair of Franzens because of those certain eyeglasses he wears so I could look more like him and people would take me seriously and that kind of thing. And I think that's great.
He'll have his own reality show. You watch. He will. Yeah. He will.
What's interesting, too, after you read Freedom, it kind of like, ruins your experiences for other novels. You think, man, they just didn't put enough effort into this, you know.
Only a few more
years.
Yeah,
that's right. They would have tried a little harder.
Speaking of that, yesterday's newspaper did have a list of the hot newly released books, and I cheated and I printed it out and brought it with me. And I was into it because the first one is a novel called The Gendarme, and Cassie Rose has it on the top of her pile. So can we talk about Mark Mustian's The Gendarme?
It's a very good book. It's his first novel, and it is a majority of it takes place during the Armenian deportation in Turkey during 1915. Now, that sounds grim, but it's one of those novels you would call compelling because actually the protagonist is a 92-year-old man who was a gendarme during that time, but he's lived a life having forgotten about it. And so he is diagnosed with a brain tumor, and he has vivid dreams, and it takes him back to that time. And he has a love affair with an Armenian girl during that time. And it's you know, it's not – it's grim subject matter, but it is as I said, it's a compelling novel because you've got two stories here of this 92-year-old man, and he's very well crafted too because he rings very true of kind of being mopey and childish and reproachful to all the people that try and take care of him. And you really come to adore him. And he loves his dreams because they're bringing back a life to him that he has forgotten. And that's what drives the story forward because as this – he's a gendarme on this forced march from Turkey through the desert to Syria. And it is historically based because the Armenian deportation during that time was considered one of the first modern genocides.
See, maybe we shouldn't be, or I shouldn't be so cynical, because it's obviously a reason, having just listened to you, why this has been recommended in the newspapers. The author is Mark Mustian. Did you know him?
No, he's an attorney in Tallahassee, Florida. He's, you know, also I think he's a city commissioner. He has two teenage kids, and he wrote in the morning for an hour with a cup of coffee for 3 years, and produced this terrific book. And he was compelled by the story of the history and actually went back to Turkey and to Syria and walked the terrain that he writes about. So that in itself, you know, I think shows how it informs the book. It is very – it rings true. You don't really forget about this narrator once it's done.
It's called The Gendarme, and the author, Mark T. Mustian.
Yep.
We have 2 minutes before our first break, and we have enough time to take a call already from Jerry, who wants to talk about When Hell Froze Over. Jerry, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen and ladies. Have ever any of you ever heard of the Polar Bear Expedition in the wake of World War One?
I haven't.
No, I'm sorry.
Anyway, this book is about that expedition, and I worked with a gentleman that fought in that army. And as Harrison Salisbury writes in the review of the book, the only instance of armed combat between American and Soviet forces. Of course, the government didn't want us to know about that, you see. And it's very interesting. It goes up in Archangel, Russia, this army went. There were 5,500 American soldiers there, and they fought with the Reds, apparently. And the interesting thing about it, I had to go back in the book and look. I thought it said that the British officers took 400 cases of scotch with them. It was 4,000.
Jerry, I've got to go to a break in less than a minute. Can you tell me the author and the title again?
Yes, sir. When Hell Froze Over, E.M. Halliday, who was a senior editor of American Heritage magazine. And the other book is complementary to it, and I forget the author of that, is Quartered in Hell. And both books are about that polar bear expedition that Woodrow Wilson, who was president at the time, didn't want the American people to know there were any American troops in there. But anyway, the two books are very, as I say, you ought to get them both.
Okay. Jerry, thanks so much for the call. Thank you for the recommendation. We're going to take a break for 1 minute and come back and invite more phone calls. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend / Books. Back in 60 seconds.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News Team.
It's not uncommon to hear people shooting guns off. You just get to a place that you know you can put as many walls between you and where you hear the gunfire. I don't run outside to see who's firing a gun.
An increase in teen violence this summer has left 5 teens dead since June. So far this year, 20 young people ages 20 and under have been killed.
Hear the latest in local and national news with Morning Edition on WOSU 89.7 FM.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News, and this is All Sides Weekend. 62 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. Cloudy skies today, some sunshine later in the afternoon, a high of 73.
Support for WOSU comes from the law firm Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, offering legal services to Central Ohio since 1936. Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, big enough to win, small enough to care. On the web at isaacbrandt.com.
All Sides Weekend continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Thank you to our producer, Amy Jurevich. I'm Christopher Purdy. We're talking about books on today's edition of All Sides Weekend with Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic and whose blog is?
TheLongestChapter.com.
Which you shouldn't miss, with Bill Eichenberger, who has got several jobs now. He's very busy, Bill Eichenberger. He's also teaching at Capital University. And your blog is?
TheBookSurf.blogspot.com.
And Kevin Griffith is on the faculty of Capital University and is a poet, also teaching poetry and creative writing at Capital University. This is an intriguing trio to talk about books, and we've already talked about Jonathan Franzen's new Freedom, his new, probably the hottest novel right now in the business, and The Gendarme by Mark Mustian. And Bill Eichenberger has brought us a book by P.F. Kluge. Tell us about P.F. Kluge.
He is a visiting writer at Kenyon right now, and his new novel is called A Call from Jersey. It is the story of Hans Greifinger, a German immigrant who comes to the United States, New York City specifically, in 1928. His brother has a friendship that he also shares with the boxer, the heavyweight champion Max Schmeling. And it's really a wonderful immigrant story from the 1930s, New York City and New Jersey, because Hans eventually goes to work for a brewery in Trenton or Newark, I think. It's Newark. And but he has a son who's sort of disowned him, changed his name to Griffin. He's a travel writer, but he's a very third-rate travel writer and getting worse all the time, lazier. And it's the story of the reconciliation with father and son, also son with classmates. It centers around the travel writer returning for a reunion. And that part of it actually is the least satisfying. And the most gripping and interesting and exciting and humorous parts are when Hans is talking about growing up in New York City in the 30s in that very large German population that came over between the wars and had sort of fled the Weimar Republic. His brother eventually goes back to Germany. He never really stopped being a German in the way that Hans becomes an American. He joins the Nazis and he loses a track with his brother for over 40 years. And there's a reunion there that's a lot more interesting. He wants to know whether his brother had become a monster, whether he fought, you know, gleefully for the Nazis or what. And so they have a reunion at the end of the book also that really is compelling. And it's a wonderful book.
P.F. Kluge has also written, I think, more than one book that is set on the Kenyon campus. I read at least one that
His previous book was terrific. They didn't say it was
Gone
a Kenyon
tomorrow.
Campus.
Okay.
Allegedly,
never, like Joan Rivers. Yeah, but I thought that was a wonderful book. I enjoyed. Do you know him? Have you interviewed him?
I have. I ran into him once at a reading.
Well, if you're listening, P.F. Kluge, come on the show. Okay? We'll talk to you about that. We would love for people to call in and tell us what you're reading. Give us some recommendations. 292-8513. That's a 614 number. 292-8513, or you can send us an email to allsides@wosu.org. Kevin Griffith, what do you have to talk about for us?
Oh, on our last show, we had talked about Stieg Larsson, the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Yes.
And we talked about the new how hot Scandinavian detective fiction was. So I wanted to bring in another one of my favorite Scandinavian writers. She's from Norway, and her name is Karen Fossum, F-O-S-S-U-M, Karen Fossum. And she has written a new novel, a new mystery novel called Broken, and it's really interesting, unlike anything I've ever read. It's almost postmodern in a way. But in this novel, the I guess you'd say gimmick is that the author is actually a character in the novel, and the characters for the novel she's going to write line up outside her door and are waiting to come in. And one breaks out of his place in the line and comes into her room and demands that a book has to be written about him. And she says, okay, I'll do it. And so she proceeds to write this book, and she says, you know, I'm going to make you a very you know, unexciting character in a mediocre about 250-page novel. And, and that's exactly.
I'll show you.
Yes. And, of course, she's being, you know, a little tongue-in-cheek there. It's more than just a mediocre novel. But it's very fascinating how she does this. And he'll talk to her at points in the novel saying, why are you developing me this way? I didn't, you know, I think she decides to, that he's gay. But not actively so. And he said, I didn't want that. I mean, I don't know what's going on. And then she gives him a job in an art gallery, and he really likes that. You know? So it's quite a fascinating. But then it turns dark, obviously, because it's a mystery novel. He meets a young drug addict who's a heroin addict, and she ends up taking almost all of his money, his life savings from him. And things proceed to get worse, and he gets in, you know, worse and worse situations. So it's very noirish. But Broken by Karen Fossum. If you're into Scandinavian detective fiction, highly recommend her.
Well, what Scandinavian detective fiction that had a wide readership in the States was there before Stieg Larsson? Pardon my ignorance, because I could be very ignorant, but what was there? I mean, has this been a genre that's been that's been talked about for years?
Well, I always liked Henning Mankell, and Henning Mankell had a pretty good readership in the United States, I thought.
Starting in around 97, 98.
Yeah, 97, 98. Yeah, the Kurt Wallander mysteries.
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
yes,
the Kurt Wallander mysteries were quite popular. They weren't top 10 bestseller type, but he had a huge reputation. He's a major figure. And it baffles me why he hasn't caught on like Stieg Larsson did. I don't know.
And Stieg Larsson was everywhere, absolutely everywhere. He still is. He passed away as a young man suddenly a couple of years ago, but he's been everywhere. Is that a case where the hype equals the quality of the work? Have you all read them?
You have, right?
I have, but that's not my job to criticize.
I have not read them, no.
But you said that, but I think in the last show you said that you didn't understand why there was so much hype.
I thought they were very good reads. They were fun, they were interesting, and okay. You know, I thought they were fine. I don't. Somebody's very savvy out there marketing these books.
But they're
very enjoyable.
You read the first one and then you went on to read.
Yes, that makes a good point. I've read all three.
If you've done that, then I think that speaks for itself.
So why don't I shut up? Because you're absolutely right. You know that's true. I mean, I was hooked enough to read all three of them and enjoyed them. But really, magazine covers and movies and they're giving tours now in Stockholm all the sites that are associated with the novels. And you know, God bless them. 292-8513. Let us hear from you about what you're reading or your recommendations. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. What do you have for us? Cassie Rose, your turn.
I just read a book called Extraordinary Renditions by Andrew Irvin, and it's a wonderful book. It is the convergence of three lives in three stories. And he's... the way that he weaves the details and interconnects them is stunning because it's not obvious. So it's one of those books at the end you think, maybe I want to reread this to watch how he does it. The first story is about a Hungarian composer who returns to Budapest for the premiere of his opera, The Golden Lotus. And he walks through the city at night re-experiencing it because he's been gone since childhood. And you get his memories. And he comes across a U.S. soldier, an African-American soldier, who's being beaten by skinheads and helps him. It's a very brief moment. Well, that soldier is the focus of the next story. And he's in Budapest on a gun-running mission being framed by his commander. But he rebels against him. And it was at this point that I realized, I thought, this soldier is staying at the same hotel as the composer. And so it's not obvious the way the details happen. And I realized he's looking at in a store window across the street in the hotel, and I realized the composer looked in that same window. Or a moment when the soldier smells the perfume of his girlfriend in the elevator. Well, his girlfriend happens to be the cousin of the composer. And she is going to the opera opening with him, and the boyfriend doesn't know that she is there. And it's these details that really draw you further into the story. And then the last of the three stories is an American violinist who's playing in the orchestra of the opera premiere. And it's a absolutely exquisite ending because the opera ends with this melody that the composer has told us in the first story was a lullaby that his mother sang to him. And she goes off on this individual riff to the horror of all the musicians. And I'll just sort of leave it at that because there's a great transformation that happens.
So you have little subtle things that are beautifully linked, I think. Mm-hmm. It doesn't hit you in the face.
From the
way you described it, I understand why some of them want to read it twice.
Yes, because I didn't realize it as I was reading through the story. And at first, he doesn't say outright everybody's staying at the same hotel. And it dawned on me, I said, well, of course they are. And I saw how he was telling us that. And it's very smart and just so beautifully done. And it's a small book, 192 pages. It's by Coffee House Press and just really a good story and terrific characters.
We've got a couple of – give me the title and author again. I'm sorry, Cassie.
It's called Extraordinary Renditions, and it's by Andrew Irvin.
Andrew Irvin's Extraordinary Renditions, and we have a couple of emails. Julie on Facebook recommends Mockingjay and The Help. Now, The Help, Catherine Stockett's book, we've talked about at length here, which is a brilliant – I thought absolutely brilliant. But Mockingjay, Cassie Rose, you brought that up last time, part of the Suzanne Collins.
Right, right. Yes. Well, first also, the gendarme that we talked about earlier is editor as The Help, and it's the Amy Einhorn imprint. So it has that same kind of feel to it. But Mockingjay is the third of the Hunger. There's the Hunger Games, Catching Fire, and then Mockingjay.
Suzanne Collins.
Mm-hmm. And I've read Hunger Games, but I've not read The Catching Fire, which I was hoping to get it in paperback, but it's not going to come out in paperback till 2012, I think, probably because it's such a big hit. But I can't speak about Mockingjay because, again, that's the third in the series, and I haven't read that.
I read your recommendation since we met last time. I read The Hunger Games, which was marketed for teens. It's a young adult book by Suzanne Collins. Disturbing on many levels, brilliantly written, well-conceived. Do I want my daughter to read it? I don't know. And it's marketed to her age group. So
Worst thing you can do is tell her that she can't.
Well, I'm not even mentioning.
She will race.
I read it in the gym. So I haven't even. I won't even bring it in the house.
That's
and that's,
right.
That's not
but
a
if she's
reflection
find
of the book.
It, she finds it.
Right.
On
She'll
her
find
own.
It on her own. And, you know. But we also have a recommendation from Lori of a book called The Thousand Autumns of Jacob de Zoet by David Mitchell. And you're all nodding, Bill. What's
No. I'm right. nodding because I know that
Kevin or
well,
I've
several people who have come up to me and talked to me. I have not read it, but David Mitchell's great. And the previous book he did, was it called Cloud Splitter? That's one of the best, most original novels I think I have ever read. Just amazing job of multiple narratives. And I'd highly recommend people go out and read Cloud Splitter. People who have read that novel, his latest, have said, well, it's just a straightforward historical novel. It's not quite as good.
Cloud Splitter was a historical novel, but with several different
intertwined genres, science fiction, history, really interesting work. So I'd recommend that.
We also have an email from a listener who just finished reading Freedom, which we discussed at the beginning of the show, Jonathan Franzen's very hot new novel. It wasn't horrible, but it certainly wasn't a masterpiece, as announced by the New York Times. I found it tough to be very sympathetic to any of the characters unless that was his point. Then this listener goes on to say, if Franzen's the next great American author, our standards have been set very low. There are much better novelists around like Louise Erdrich and Chang Rei Li's The Surrendered.
Interesting.
It is an interesting. I thank you for that email very much. If that wants to engender some discussion, Louise Erdrich, of course, I am familiar with. Chang Rei Li, I am not. Is that somebody you know? The Surrendered.
I don't know.
That's something then for us to write down and think about. Thank you very much for that. You can also call us at 614-292-8513. Our email address is allsides@wosu.org. What is the wake of forgiveness? I'm looking upside down, Cassie Rose.
It's a book coming out in October written by Bruce Matchart, and he's a graduate of the OSU writing program. And this book has been getting a lot of positive forecast, and he's going to get a lot of press for it, too. He's doing a lot of touring, and I'm a third of the way through it, and it is a very, very interesting book that is about horse racing. It takes place in 1910 around that area. Large farmers are farming area in Texas and in a county in that area. And the book starts with, you know, a son is being born and the mother dies. And so this farmer has four sons. And one of the big things he does is race his horses. And he gains land by doing so. And this is taking, again, place in a large part in Texas. And I don't quite know where it's going to go at this point, but there's a huge horse race that has just happened with a very wealthy gentleman from Mexico who has come to the area with his three daughters. And there's a matchup that is going on, you know, who's going to win the race, and the Mexican wants the sons to marry his daughters.
So we look forward to this publication in about a month.
Yes, it's coming out in October, called The Wake of Forgiveness by Bruce Machart, M-A-C-H-A-R-T.
Who is a product of the OSU Creative Writing Program?
Yes, he is. And the back of the book is blurred by Melanie Raython, who
is a
teacher in the program.
Okay. Joy called in, wanted to recommend Shannon Hale, Young Adults Works, and we've had an email. We're getting a lot of emails and a lot of calls now. Sarah commenting on Freedom. I plan on reading it, but I have been a bit daunted by the comments from friends. The sentiment is similar to a book reviewer who suspects that if a woman wrote a similar book, it would be marketed as a domestic novel and not the great American novel. Now, that's an interesting point. I really hadn't thought of that. Sarah goes on to recommend short stories by Lydia Davis.
Oh, yes. We talked about Lydia Davis before. I love Lydia Davis. Collected Stories of Lydia Davis, one of my favorite books of all time. I brought it in. It was the one with the bright pink cover.
I read it in your recommendation, and you were right.
And she's phenomenal. She's the real deal. And each story offers surprises, and she'll write. One story will be one sentence long, and another story will be massive, and a really interesting writer, Lydia
she's
Davis.
She's a current writer, isn't she?
Yes.
She's working
now. Oh, yes.
But she's sort of been a little under the radar, I guess, until now. But
she's a translator. She translates French literature. That's what she does for a living. Yeah.
Well, Christopher, I wanted to ask her, or ask the panel, that any emailer had acknowledged that it might have been Franzen's intent, but do you have to sympathize with the characters to enjoy a novel and or feel that it's a great novel?
Are you asking me?
Yes. No. I mean, that isn't a requirement, is it?
No. They just have to keep my attention, and you can, alas, do that by being horrible.
Lot of the characters in this novel are horrible. Believe me. Even the minor characters are that way, but it's done with such skill. It's just fun to witness and read.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I remember talking to Alice McDermott, and she was saying that she doesn't understand why people seek out books that seem to resonate with them or are about their lives. She said, seek out completely the other.
That's a very good point.
And then learn about, you know, the other. So I just always wondered about.
Mm-hmm. We have to take a break. We'll be back in 90 seconds. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books with Bill Eichenberger, Cassie Rose, and Kevin Griffith. We're looking forward to your phone calls and your emails. Back in 90 seconds.
On the next Fresh Air, singer Theo Bleckman talks about his love of show tunes and avant-garde music. He has a new CD. Join us.
Comes a rainstorm, put your rubbers on your feet. Comes a snowstorm, you can get a little heat. Comes love, nothing can be.
That and much more on Fresh Air beginning in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. And tonight at 8:30 on WOSU TV, join us for Columbus on the Record. Mike Thompson and his panel will have a complete analysis of the debate between Governor Ted Strickland and challenger John Kasich, and we'll also discuss Kasich pulling ahead in the polls and a discussion of the fallout from the corruption probe in Cleveland. That's on Columbus on the Record tonight at 8:30 on WOSU TV.
Support for the Statehouse News Bureau stories on WOSU comes from the Ohio Education Association, representing 131,000 teachers, support professionals, and higher education faculty who are working for great public schools for every child. Online at ohea.org.
63 degrees in downtown Columbus. Clouds today, some sunshine peeking through those clouds this afternoon, and a high of 73. Clear skies tonight, a low of 52 degrees. Sunshine for Saturday and a nice day with a high of 82. Clouds and a slight chance of rain on Sunday, a high of 78. All Sides Weekend continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Amy Jurevich, our producer. We're back to talk about books in our final segment. We have a lot of people waiting to participate in the conversation, so let's get to David, who wants to talk about See What I'm Saying and the Five Senses. David, are you there?
Hi. Yes, a really interesting book. It studies the interaction of the senses. I can give one example. It's called the McGurk effect. If you watch someone saying the syllable va, V-A, but someone is behind you making the sound ba, V-A, you will hear va because your sight will override your hearing. And this is apparently a well-known thing called the McGurk effect. And he also gives a lot of other illustrations about how the senses interact. And when you have a certain suggestion, you see things redder than they are. And it's really quite amazing.
That sounds fascinating.
It does. Well, the name of the book is See What I'm Saying. Is that right?
Right, by Lawrence Rosenblum.
Okay, thank you.
He's a scientific researcher, but it's really fascinating.
David, thank you for the recommendation.
You know, some friends of mine have always made fun of me because I will say, if I don't have my contacts in or my glasses in, I can't hear you.
Well, that's very good.
Yes.
Now this proves my point.
They were right.
It's the McGurk effect.
The McGurk effect. Now you know what to call it.
Yeah.
Gabby is on the line. She's a fan, or Gabby's a fan of Mad Men. So am I, and wants to recommend Mad Men Unbuttoned. Hello, Gabby. Are you there?
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, I read the book Mad Men Unbuttoned and because I had not seen the series and everyone was talking about the new series starting up, you know, just a few weeks ago. And so I wanted to know more about it. And now, of course, I'm hooked on the show after reading this. But I grew up in the 50s and this talks about advertising trends that relate to what society is doing and you know, when it connects with the show and the characters of the show. But every chapter is a different aspect of our culture, like music or art or whatever. It talks about when the Volkswagen Bug was introduced and all the advertising about that. So it's really a wonderful book. And I recommend it.
I love Mad Men because I like the way the women dress on the TV show. I mean,
and if you like Mad Men, I would recommend that you seek out James Wolcott's blog.
Oh, really?
He writes for Vanity Fair, and he's a huge fan. And I think you can go through the archives or search the archives, and he's had commentary throughout the entire run of the series.
We have an email from Sarah who wants to recommend Miranda July's collection, No One Belongs Here More Than You. Kevin, I think that's a writer known to you. Is that right?
I know that. I know of that collection. And if you if you go to Amazon.com and look at top 20 short story collections, it's always up there. So it's a pretty provocative collection. I haven't read all of it. I've read some of Miranda July, though, and I would recommend it too.
And Paul asks the panel, have there been any recent works by Wendell Berry? We've always enjoyed his work, but haven't seen anything recent. Anybody know?
Wendell Berry's a great great poet, and he's also a good essayist. And I don't know of any specific recent works by Wendell Berry, but I know at the Whetstone Library, every time I go in there, he's always on the end caps as a recommended writer. So,
We have a call from Ed who wants to recommend a book with a great title I haven't heard before, Packing for Mars. Ed, are you there? I hung up on Ed. I'm sorry, Ed. Call back, Ed. How about Bill? Bill, are you there?
Hello.
Bill, go ahead. You're on.
Yeah, I came across a book mentioned on a website the other day and found a copy at Amazon called Nada by Daniel Boyd.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, I found it a very interesting story. It's a high adventure with buried treasure and shotguns and Nazis and a Mexican posse, but it's told with a sense of humor, as if somebody was actually standing there in the room telling you this story. And as it goes on, you actually get more involved with the characters than you do with the wild antics going on.
How do you spell it? Nada?
N-A-D-A?
N-A-D-A.
Okay. And like nothing.
Nada,
nada.
Like nothing.
Do you remember the website where you found it? I'm aware of that book because the author had contacted me and was going to send a galley, and I did some research on the book. I'm curious as to how you found it.
I check out on a website called Mystery File.
And another
Okay.
Bill Kreider's pop culture blog. and another one by George Kelly. Anyway, the recommendations were pretty unanimous, and I had a good time reading it.
Great. Great.
Thanks so much for the recommendation of Nada. We appreciate that very much. 292-8513 is the number to call. We do ask you keep your calls brief because the phones are – I don't know what you people are saying, but my phone's reading off the hook. We're also getting plenty of emails at allsides@wosu.org. I think you know, with summer's ending and people, are more in the mood to read maybe. I don't know, to – cuddle up with a good book as the nights get chilly or whatever. Do we see a trend that way? Is summer downtime for reading, or is
people start to hunker down? I think.
Yeah,
it's also a big publishing time too. Mm-hmm. The publishing houses bring out a lot of name authors, and the awards start happening too. The Man Booker Prize is going to happen in another couple of weeks. Then the National Book Award.
There's a book called Room that's been getting a lot of attention.
It's
a finalist for the Man Booker Prize. And yes. NPR had a big deal about it. Have you heard about that?
No,
Room?
I've just started reading it last night. And it's narrated by a five-year-old boy who is in a room with his mother, and she has been kidnapped by a man. I just started it last night, but and it is about their life together, how she creates a life for him in this room, and then what happens. It was long listed and then made the short list for the Man Booker, and it is also the cover story for the New York Times Book Review this Sunday.
Give that away, why don't you? Thank you very much. We have a call from Jackie. Jackie wants to recommend Arranged Marriages. Hello, Jackie.
Hi.
Go ahead.
The Devaka Rooney, I can't remember her first name, but she is my favorite author by far. She's kind of my go-to author. She's an Indian writer who blends the Indian culture with American culture beautifully. And her writing is, I just find it very relaxing. I can read and reread. Arranged Marriages was one, I think, her first collection of short stories. She has several books, and I would recommend any of them.
Tell us the author again.
The last name is Devaka Rooney. I'm probably not pronouncing it right.
That's close.
If we search the titles, I think you'd be okay. Arranged Marriages. Thank you so much, Jackie, for the recommendation.
Sure.
Ed, thank you for calling back. I hit the wrong button before. Let's try you now. Ed, are you there?
Sure.
Thank God. Good.
Packing for Mars by Mary Roach. She went to NASA and interviewed the astronauts and a lot of the background people going all the way back to the beginning of the space flight era, and trying to understand what it would take to get into space, why we have to do certain things, everything from what do you do about the food to how do you eliminate the waste and how do you pack to get to Mars, and some very interesting and a very funny read, actually, a little bit sarcastic at times, too, heavily footnoted with anecdotes about some of the episodes. And the other book, and I think it's a sad book in a way, is George Carlin's what he called a sort of biography that was finished up by another gentleman. A good look at the creative process and how he went about things, and a good look at his life. But you wonder, coming away from the book, whether he would have been better without all the drug use he had, or whether he would have been worse without the drug use. It's just a very interesting. He's one of my heroes, and I found the book fascinating, but also quite sad.
Thank you, Ed. I've read Last Words, and I can second that recommendation very much. It is sad in a way, but George Carlin is never all that sad, really, even now. So I don't think he'd want us to be weeping over one of his books. But thank you very much. We have a call from Mark, who wants to recommend another great title, Idiot America. Mark, are you there?
Yeah, the book is Idiot America, How Stupidity Became a Virtue in the Land of the Free by Charlie Pierce.
All the pens nodding, yes. Go ahead.
He starts with three basic premises. Any theory is valid if it sells books, soaks up ratings, or otherwise moves units. Fact is that which enough people believe. Truth is determined by how fervent they believe it. And anything be true if somebody says it loudly enough.
I think the latter is probably true.
Frightening in equal measure.
Idiot America. Tell me the author again.
Charles Pierce. He's a writer for the Boston Globe, I believe.
Okay, that's very good to have that. Thank you very much, Mark, for your call. 292-8513 is the number, allsides@wosu.org. I'm Christopher Purdy. We're talking about books with Bill Eichenberger, Cassie Rose, and Kevin Griffith. Cassie, what's coming up on your blog?
I think probably I'm going to be writing about The Slap next, which I actually have in front of me. And I read this book because I had heard that it was considered offensive. It was long listed for the Man Booker Prize, and it caused some controversy because people said it was offensive. And I thought, well, I wonder what an offensive book is, and which is really what I want to write about on the blog. I think it's an incredibly powerful book, a mesmerizing book. It's an Australian book set in the suburbs of Australia. Kind of got a Franzen kind of a thing going here. I don't know why I say that because I haven't read the Franzen book. But it's based on something that happens at a barbecue where a man slaps a four-year-old little boy who is not his own son. And this reverberates out throughout. I mean, the four-year-old is the epitome of the undisciplined kid who annoys everyone. And he
who hasn't at least wanted to do that?
Right.
You know,
right.
That's interesting because is it a contemporary book? Because when I was a little kid, we got slapped all the time by neighbors.
Yeah. Yeah.
We did.
Oh, yeah.
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 Well, that was
mm-hmm.
part,
that was
part
of it. And no one thought twice about it.
No, they told you. Just hit him if he gets out of line. Yeah, that's what they said.
Just crack him one. That's
yeah,
all.
Yes. Yeah. No, this is in modern times. And so, and there's a lot of – he makes good points about liberalism, conservatism. He has characters here who are the men are very successful, arrogant, you know, beautiful wives. But their internal thoughts are racist and pornographic. Which is where I think the offensiveness comes, but I think the characters are offensive, not the book.
And they have bratty kids.
And, yeah, they have bratty kids. It's a fascinating book because it takes you through many different viewpoints of the people who are at the barbecue, rolls forward to the court date because the parents, who are more hippie-like.
Court date?
Yes.
Are suing
the,
yeah.
Yes.
They sue somebody for slapping. I mean, did he hurt the kid or did he just sort of, you know, whack him one?
Well, the kid picks up a baseball bat and threatens the man's child is standing there. And comes up, lifts the boy, the four-year-old, whose name is Hugo, lifts him up to stop him from hitting anyone, especially his son, with the baseball bat, puts him back down, and the kid starts kicking the man's legs, so he reaches out and slaps him. Well, the parents, Gary and Rosie, this little kid, are kind of like hippie, easygoing, you know, all of that.
I'm
and
there.
They go to the police and file charges. So all of this is moving forward, and between family members, and there's a big Greek family here, and all the cousins and the friends that are in this group, you know, everybody has different viewpoints. Some say he should not have hit the kid. Others say he should have hit him. And so it rolls up to this court date, and then you have it afterwards.
Paging Nancy Grace. They're going to really, that's interesting. Who's the author?
The author, I don't know if I can pronounce his name. It's Christos Tsiolakis.
Okay.
Tsiolkas.
Now, is he a Greek living in Australia, or is he an Australian, or it's set in Australia, you said?
It's set in Australia. Okay. It appears to be. I don't know much about him. But I will tell you also that the other thing that's really brilliant about this book, you have no consciousness of the author. You are so lost in the characters and what is going on. You have no sense of his crafting.
The slap. So we'll read that and talk about that at more length next month. Mm-hmm. It might win. Is that a Booker shortlist? Did you say
it didn't? It didn't make the shortlist.
See, don't be hitting someone else's kid if you want to win a literary award. Forget that. 2928513. You can send emails to allsides@wosu.org. We've got about 5 minutes left for this discussion, and we have a call from Betty. Hello, Betty. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
My recommendation is a book, title is After the Prophet by Leslie Hazelton. And it's just what it says. It's after the prophet is gone, then what happens in the Islamic community? And it brings us up through the years. And I found it very enlightening, and I would recommend it to anybody that's interested in that and learning more, not in criticizing or anything like that. It's just learning more, and I learned some from that.
Is it a novel, Betty?
Yes, it is. I would call it historical novel.
After the Prophet by Leslie Hazelton.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Betty, for the recommendation and
the call.
Welcome. Thank you. And we have an email from Amy who recommends Good Behavior by Nathan Henry. Is that registering? Well, Amy, thank you very much. It's a great read, and I'm all for great reads. I'm looking for books that lately. I've been reading a lot of things that I can't get lost in, you know, that are sort of work. They're a little bit effortful, except the one I told you about off mic, Cassie, that I'm not going to mention on the air that I'm reading. But I need to go from sort of light lit to I need to find something I could get lost in. And you're talking about Freedom and The Slap, mm-hmm. and Kluge's book A Call from Jersey. So I've got three really I've got three really good candidates so far. 292-8513 is the number as we wind down. You've been a little quiet, Kevin, because we've all been talking too much. So, Kevin Griffith, let's give you the mic for a while.
Well, I wanted to recommend, I'll throw out one of my more bizarre picks.
Oh, good.
These are my favorite, Kevin.
Yeah. This is a book called To Teach, and it's a graphic novel about how to teach, how to be an elementary school teacher. And I was reading it. It's great. It has great tips about how to teach. And then I noticed it was written by William Ayers. Now, you remember William Ayers,
Bill
right?
Ayers?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's the terrorist Obama was supposedly palling around
with. Oh, my God.
And it turns out he's a professor of education at the University of Illinois.
Yeah.
And it's that aside, I thought that was really interesting.
But it's the same one? It's the same?
Oh, yeah, Bill Ayers. Okay. This is a book by Bill Ayers. He's written a comic book on how to teach. And it's wonderful. It has great insights on all sorts of facets of teaching, but especially about, I thought this was good because I encounter this a lot at Capitol, I'm sure Bill will too, about how much difference just the environment, like the room, the shape of the room, the size of the room makes and how you teach and how it's so important to have a room that's a welcoming environment, has enough space. But anyway, if you're interested in teaching or you're a teacher or you want to see how to relate to kids or what they have to go through in school, To Teach, The Journey in Comics by William Ayers.
And then read The Slap.
Yeah.
We have a couple of minutes left. We have a lot of people waiting online, but I only have time. I'm sorry to choose one. So Abby wants to talk about Ruth Reichl, a favorite of mine. Hello, Abby.
Hello.
Hi, are you there? Go ahead.
Yes, I read all. Well, she was interviewed on NPR with Terry Gross, so I picked up her book. The first one is Tender at the Bone. And then she wrote a companion book called Comfort Me with Apples. And then the last one was a book about her mother. And it was the dearest set of books that I read. I passed it on to all my daughters. They've all loved them. Good experience, good reading.
Ruth Reichl was, maybe still is, I think, the food critic for the New York Times. Isn't that right? Or the restaurant critic, right? And she has branched out. I read Comfort Me with Apples and thought it was terrific. So I'm very pleased to have the recommendation. R-E-I-C-H-L, Ruth Reichl. Thank you so much for that call, Abby. In our last couple of minutes, anybody have final recommendations? Kevin Griffith?
Go with Bill.
Bill Ruckin. Yeah. Bill's got his list. Bill I can remember. Go ahead.
There's a wonderful history book called Staying Alive, the 1970s and the Last Days of the Working Class by Jefferson Cowie. And it's called Staying Alive based on the song title from the Bee Gees. It's a real American tragedy. It's the death of the labor movement, and more than that, and it's a very even-handed one, but he takes a look at what was going on culturally. He's got a whole chapter on Springsteen, but he also has a section on Devo and how important they were and the punk movement was during the fall of the unions. Talks about Nixon, mostly 68 through 82, and the most interesting statistic you'll find from the book, and a lot of people may have already heard this, but 1946 through 1973, the middle class gained in salary 50% raise from 46 to 73, from 73 to 2009, 0%. So the death of the working class really came with a huge price, and it's interesting. It's about the entry of women and minorities into the working class at a time when industry was absolutely collapsing in the United States.
And Bill Eichenberger, give us your blog address one more time.
Thebooksurf.blogspot.com.
Cassie Rose, give us your blog address one more time.
It's thelongestchapter.com.
Kevin Griffith, give us some class, some classy adult last
no
words.
Time for that.
No time for that. I'm Christopher Purdy. This has been All Sides Weekend Books. My thanks to everybody who called and emailed, Bill Eichenberger, Cassie Rose, and Kevin Griffith. Thank you. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.